The Boatman by Sarah Beth Hunt. Chapter 1. The day the boatman arrived on the island, he caught everyone except Isla by surprise. At the exact moment that he crossed the horizon, Isla was sitting as usual on the stone wall that overlooked the pale sand dunes, watching the fishermen paddle their small boats back to the island and haul them up to rest on the folds of sand. Her wild dark hair danced languidly in the breeze as she swung her legs in the numbing silence of some daydream, and her silver eyes peered across the blinding glassy sea, contemplating magic and places far away. Over and over, the waves rolled peacefully against the sandy shore, the endless whispering that was the backdrop of island life. For as long as she could remember, Isla had whispered back, willing these waves to reveal the secrets of their long voyage, what wonders they had seen, what magical lands they had brushed past before reaching the shores of her island. But the language of waves is not the language of little girls, and Isla could not make out the mysteries they might have revealed to her. And so, instead, Isla simply sat twirling the stem of a red hibiscus she had picked from the front porch of her house between her two fingers, and thinking of all the things she might do if only she could cross the sea. The island where Isla had been born was surrounded by a wide stretch of sea, which rocked and crashed in on itself, and was silent for a journey of 3 days by boat before it reached the shores of the mainland. And because islanders could not see the mainland from where they stood, and the mainlanders could not see the island even on the clearest day, both believed that they were separate, independent, just as people had for generations. As for the island, local fishermen called it the Great Pearl because when they were far out at sea, the island shimmered in incandescent shade from the rows of blooming loess and gave them hope. But Isla had never been far enough away from the island to know it from this view as a thing apart from herself. To her, it was the island and nothing more. It had all begun one day during the monsoon, that eternal blue year that her mother had died. They had stood together among the rows of loess, and Isla had reached up to grasp her father's hand and pointed out to the sea. "What's there?" she had asked. "The sea, of course," Pedro had replied. But Isla shook her head. "Then what?" Pedro, startled from some dismal reverie of his late wife and his own empty bed, had sighed, and then told his first lie to this young daughter, knowing it would not be his last. "Nothing," he said, "nothing lies beyond the sea." So perhaps the seed of this yearning to know the world beyond the sea had not begun with Isla at all, but was born out of the great lie that her father told, because Pedro had wanted the island, which also meant he himself, to be the border of Isla's world and to be enough. But Isla had not believed the lie. And so as time passed, the questions came again and again, welling up unbidden from that empty place in her heart. What does the world look like? What's beyond the sea? So that even when Pedro began to tell her, "The mainland is there, treacherous, a barbaric place," these fool answers could not stem the flood. Isla learned from her friend Lucas, a trader's son, that it was the mainland kingdom that lay beyond the sea, and that long ago it had controlled all the lands of the known world and all the islands in the sea. The mainland had given the islanders their language, she was told, but had been unable to dislodge the deep knowledge islanders held of themselves. Hearing these things, the first tangible evidence of life beyond her island, was like hearing a clear bell ringing out through silence. And she had run to Thomas. "What do you think is out there beyond the sea?" she had asked this boy she loved most of all. But Thomas had simply shrugged. To him, it was an unanswerable question. Who could say what was beyond the sea? Even his father did not know such things. Over the years, when a certain blue mood fell upon her, Isla would ask this question again and again. What is the world beyond the sea? but the people around her would simply reply, "Angela, Isla, leave it alone. Be satisfied." If her mood was truly dark, she would protest, "There must be something out there." But then their faces would pinch and they would say, "What are you, a traitor, that you must know these things? We are here, and that is that. Why does there have to be anything out there beyond the sea?" Why she asked these questions, even Isla didn't know. For how could a child know, when even her father did not, that these questions of life beyond the sea were not really questions of the island and the mainland, nor of the difference between a familiar and an uncommon life, but were, in fact, the first stirrings of a young soul who had not yet lost the desire to know why it had come to this life, why it breathed in and out with such passion, and where its place was in this vast universe. For Isla's part, she only knew that she felt a great emptiness, and because she had not yet lived long enough to fill this emptiness with the quest for wealth or status or love, Isla could only gaze along the edge of the island as the shoreline wound out to her left and to her right and disappeared again into the shifting waters of the sea and repeat again and again, "There must be more than this." They began to call her Ubash. When she had asked Dari up at the cafe what that meant, he had laughed in his low, bellowing way and told her, "It means you are discontent, Islaja. It means you aren't happy being like everyone else." And Isla had wondered why anyone would be happy being the same as everyone else. At home, Isla had interrupted the warm indigo scent of the evening and asked her father what it meant to be Ubash. "Well," Pedro said, looking up curiously from the boiling pot of Losa tea, "it means you are like Ubash, who was the first son of Tali and was always dissatisfied with what life offered him. It means," he nodded at her meaningfully, "that you aren't happy with what life has given you." He paused, and the cicadas had filled the silence between them with a comforting cacophony, and the boiling of the tea had diverted this great weight of words. "Perhaps it means you are too selfish to appreciate what the world has given you," Pedro spoke and fell silent again, and his brow creased with sharp, uneven lines as he ruminated on some present disappointment or past regret. And because Isla could not discern which it was, she was also silent in that sinking night and drummed out an old tune with her fingers onto the broad dining table. Here on the island of her birth, Isla knew all the answers to her life. She knew the steady roots of the banyan trees and the habits of the band of monkeys who lived in their lofty branches. She knew the secret freshwater springs, the migration of the black-faced gulls, the salty taste of the wind before a storm. She knew which of her friends would become fishermen, which harvesters, which losa growers, which traders. She could not remember a time when she hadn't known where a path would lead, what might be around the corner of a cliff, or whose voice was calling out after her in the dusk. And yet it felt to Isla as if she was always wearing someone else's clothes, or as if she was stepping in another's footprints, pressed firmly into the sand, the way she had once skipped after her father along the shore of the sea. The life stretching out before her felt used and smelled suspiciously familiar, but of someone else. And it seemed to Isla, even at the age of 10, as if she knew how each step on the path of her life would feel before she took it, where each contour lay, and how it would inevitably end. Then, in that white morning light, the boatman arrived. For a brief moment, Isla glanced back and saw the bright red bags of the losa harvesters on her own land, weaving at an imperceptible pace along the rows that flushed a familiar purple hue and sent the soft fragrance of losa wafting through the humid sea air. And then she looked again and saw his boat rise up clear on the horizon, sails full of the winds of destiny, and it was a boat unlike any the islanders had ever seen. "Look, look, what's that on the horizon?" people called. But while crowds gathered on the sandy shore and pressed their faces against each other, Isla could only whisper, "At last."